For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. For new people, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here at Ancient Dragon Zengate, and I'm very happy to have giving a talk this evening Katie Dudzik, who's a longtime practitioner here, who's back in Chicago, finally. Katie was away at Green Gulch Farm, working in the kitchen for several months at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, and more recently in Spain for 2 or 3 months, doing a pilgrimage there, and we'll be talking about some of that maybe tonight.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. Welcome to all the new people. If there are any, I'm not sure exactly. They're new faces to me, but I've been gone for a while, so maybe you're not actually new, but welcome anyways. Thank you, as always, to Taigen for this opportunity to talk, to share my practice, hopefully sincerely and maybe a little bit playfully, and to just see the sort of openness that I think that Zazen brings to my life. I'll talk, like Taigen said, about Green Gulch and the Camino and just sort of the things that I'm thinking about right now, things that I'm reading. A lot of my thoughts aren't really fully formed, so maybe I'll just give you a reading list. If nothing else, that's what you'll get from this talk, so enjoy that. I'm going to start the talk with the poem that I ended my last talk with, because it feels very pertinent still and probably will for my practice. So it's from Jane Hirschfield, who lived at Tassajara for quite some time, I think. And I'll leave it at that. It's called A Cedary Fragrance. Even now, decades after, I wash my face with cold water, not for discipline, nor memory, nor the icy awakening slap, but to practice choosing to make the unwanted wanted. So in October, I decided to leave Chicago for who knows how long, and I wanted to sort of take a risk and see what was out there for me. It was a very scary move for me. I didn't really feel like it was possible in many ways, and I feel sort of this pride that I feel like it's important for me to mention that I feel proud of myself for sort of taking that leap and doing things that I didn't think that I was physically or mentally ready for. So first I went to Green Gulch Farm. I'm not sure if everyone is familiar with Green Gulch or the Camino, so afterwards I'd be so happy to talk about it. It'll take me a little while to get into it, but I soften after a little while, and we'll talk forever if I'm not really giving you enough of an exposition about these two lovely adventures. But Green Gulch is in Northern California. It's a beautiful, beautiful place right by the ocean, and there's just endless opportunities for hikes and to sort of be really intimate with nature and with yourself, because you're in a monastic setting, and there's a ton of experienced priests there and people from different parts of their lives who are sort of seeking solace or sort of a change or wanting to deepen their practice. A lot of people have never practiced before who come to Green Gulch too, so it provides a space for sort of a lot of searching, and there's a good deal of openness and for me, just like the, I'll say later, it was sort of a mix of community and solitude. And I worked, as Tygen said, in the kitchen for 4 months, and that in itself, I think I could talk about for hours of just how scary it was for me to sort of be in the kitchen and face my own difficulties with labor in the kitchen. But I have tons of great memories from my time there, and I think both Green Gulch and the Camino were an invitation for me to go inward, and I feel just boundless gratitude for both opportunities and for everyone and everything that led me to get there. And I think both were sort of opportunities for me to explore and attend to purpose and meaning and a new way of looking, a new way of sort of thinking about my life and what I can do while I'm here. Different ways for me to challenge myself and my rhythms and my habits. Can I be independent? I would ask myself a lot. And what does it look like for me to go against the grain? Is that possible? And what does it look like to slow down? And within all these questions, I think one thing that came up for me a lot, and that still I'm thinking about quite a bit, is a quote that actually, I'll be really cheesy and say that Suzuki Roshi gave a talk also on June 19th. It's June 19th, by the way, 1971. He gave a talk and I think loosely quoted Dogen when he said that if your practice does not include everything, then this is not real practice. So I think this comes up a lot in my life, and you'll see a lot of connections in this talk this evening about that. And sort of my question of how does presence, being present, involve pleasure and pain, and sort of exploring the relationship between the two and trying to make sense of all of that. Luckily, we have a comment period afterwards, so you guys can, you know, tell me what I'm missing here and maybe make some connections for me. I think at Green Gulch, I learned a lot about what it looks like to sort of be myself and what would it be like to sort of, for a second, stop comparing myself to other people and stop trying to be like other people. And I think there were a lot of sort of mentors there that reminded me in different ways how to be wholeheartedly myself and to notice the fear of what that looks like to not be. And there's also a sense of sort of taking your time. You know, when you're in a monastic setting, at least for me, it was each moment is very scheduled and the forms are very important, and there's really such an opportunity to enjoy each and every moment and to be very present in each moment. And everyday activities mean so much more, I feel like. And even now, coming back, there's such a joy for me to do the dishes and to clean the house and to really take the time to do that. And that is just as important as everything else that I do in my day. And so I spent a lot of time doing dishes at Green Gulch. So if you want to do more dishes, you can go to Green Gulch anytime. Or you can come over too, but I would like to do them, and so I don't want to share that. And now, you know, in everyday activities, now when I take the time to move the glass jar to where it belongs in the kitchen or clean each and every tea leaf off of the tea filter, I just feel a different intimacy with that moment. And I think my time at Green Gulch and the Camino gave me space to better understand that and to understand the difficulties in finding my rhythm and kind of struggling to listen to my rhythms. There's a moment early on in my time at Green Gulch where I think I was going for a hike, and I was sitting having maybe some tea before I went out for a hike, just sitting outside, and I got reprimanded for wearing shorts. And in the Shingi, in the rules don't say anything about shorts or no shorts, and we don't have to have an argument about that because you don't want me to whine for too long. But I think that moment was really important for me. The first thing that absolutely came out for me was sort of this feeling of shame of, how come the men don't get in trouble for wearing shorts? How come it's me getting in trouble? This is bullshit. And of course, a lot of other things came up about, like, getting reprimanded in general, and all those difficulties with that, of course. But it was so interesting to sort of see this go, see what came out for me during this time, and to eventually speak with the priest who reprimanded me about it, and to get a sense of, you know, what was on her mind when she was speaking to me. But overall, I think the deeper understanding was the idea that in that moment, I was sort of made to hate myself, and what is that like for others who are made to hate themselves for being who they are, for not being white, or for myriad other things. And I think this is sort of coming up for me more and more in this in the practice of this sort of Buddhism is not this perfect thing. Nothing is a perfect thing. I want to just find this perfect thing that's so easy and simple, and that I can just feel so comfortable in. And it exists within these systems, these really complex systems that I still feel horrified by, and still feel the difficulties of how easy some of them are for me, and the contradictions within them that I can't escape. And I'll kind of go back into some of these things later in my talk, but I think another theme that sort of keeps coming up is sort of this intimacy, this feeling how important it is for me to take a moment and be present, and not sort of get lost in my thoughts. And as I reflected on a lot of this, a quote from a clinical psychologist that I appreciate, that I come back to a lot, from, his name is John Wellward. I think I've seen some of his writings in, you know, like those best Buddhist writings of 2008 or whatever. And he says, "This then is the meaning of the charnel ground. We have to be willing to come apart at the seams, to be dismantled, to let our old ego structures fall apart before we can begin to embody sparks of the essential perfection at the core of our nature. To evolve spiritually, we have to allow these unworked, hidden, messy parts of ourselves to come to the surface. It's not that the strategic, controlling ego is something bad or some unnecessary, horrible mistake. Rather, it provides the indispensable grist that makes alchemical transformation possible." And I think, again, for me, presence is a process of both pain and joy, as both inputs and outputs. And I feel like I really explored that theme on the Camino. So for anyone who doesn't know, briefly, the Camino is a pilgrimage that may or may not have been based on some actual things that happened. And if anyone's Christian, maybe they can explain this better to me, because I've sort of tried to get rid of all the Christian past, because it's too hard for me right now in my life. But that was a random tangent. So I walked from Saint John in France to Santiago, Spain, which is 800 kilometers, and I got to meet amazing people and see amazing things, eat very, very delicious food. Basically, I would wake up every day, walk a lot, spend some time with myself, spend some time with others, again, eat food, see delightful things, and Also meet really wonderful locals and practice my Spanish with people who were very patient with me. And repeat every day. It was an amazing experience. I have a lot of positive things to say about it, but in the talk I like to talk about the difficult things and to also to sort of practice being open in a group of people. So it's so much easier to just talk about the positive things. So every day I would agonize about what it must have been like for people who are forcibly meant to walk and have very gruesome and horrific experiences and walk and walk and walk. And one of the days that I was walking, it was quite a huge deal that a DACA recipient, which is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, someone who is here, a young person who is here undocumented, but was able to get a work permit. This is the first time that someone in that status was actually detained and removed from the U.S. while I was on the walk. And it was really meaningful to be able to work many years ago when this first came out, 5 years ago actually, and talk with people who had to have these horrific experiences in their lives. And so I felt very troubled hearing this, and it sort of brought back memories of a time when I felt connected to people. And I feel like I also was not lost on obviously the colonial history of Spain, and there's many statues celebrating this in one way or the other, and the victory over the Moors. And I think I was constantly searching for retellings of the story, of this dominant story. But within this, it was also very easy for me to sort of idealize and my time, and I was reading before I left for the trip, the morning before I left for the trip, Yozan had lent me Rebecca Solnit's Wanderlust, and she says that she describes pilgrimage as a liminal state between one's past and future identities, and thus outside the established order, in a state of possibility. And as my partner was reading this aloud to me before I left, I was feeling exactly that, idealistic and just so excited to have this opportunity. But I really feel like I savored the experience, and it was one where I felt very calm and very at home with myself. And yet there's so many contradictions. And yet I felt like it was really hard to show up in the moment each day. And even in the spectacular place that I was in Spain, there was still this rush every day. I felt like I had to go faster, even though I felt calm. There was still this push to go, go, go. And I couldn't avoid that. And I would walk, and all of a sudden I would think, oh, I need to get to the town faster. I need to get to the next town. Like, there would just be this voice in my head, like, oh, why are you going so slowly? What's going on? And additionally, deep down, when I'm incredibly honest with myself, I think there was a point, I think, before the trip, and maybe even at the beginning of the trip, where I thought to myself, if I can do this, then I'll be worthy enough. So I think one of the difficult things for me too, personally, is to notice that and to notice when I think that some experience is going to make me better, or that if I reach this experience, that's it. So watching myself do these things that cause suffering to myself and to others is very powerful in the moment. Also, recently when I was preparing for this talk, and trying to piece something together to say, besides just telling random stories about my trip and like blisters. I, again, was reading aloud, notice the theme here, and reading from poet and playwright Claudia Rankine in her 2014 book, Citizen. She writes, "Not long ago, you are in a room where someone asked the philosopher Judith Butler what makes language hurtful. You can feel everyone lean in. Our very being exposes us to the address of another," she answers. "We suffer from the condition of being addressable. Our emotional openness," she adds, "is carried by our addressability. Language navigates this. For so long, you thought the ambition of racist language was to denigrate you and erase you as a person. After considering Butler's remarks, you begin to understand yourself as rendered hypervisible in the face of such language acts. Language that feels hurtful is intended to exploit all the ways that you are present. Your alertness, your openness, and your desire to engage actually demand your presence. You're looking up, you're talking back, and as insane as it is, saying please." So, again, I ask myself, what are the systems that are in play here? How am I causing suffering? What is the experience of others? And this is a question that I'm asking myself every day, and I think something that sums up my idea of Buddhism and Buddhist practice is something that Lama Owens says. He's a recent PhD from the Divinity School of Harvard, and he co-wrote Radical Dharma with Angel Kyodo Williams and Jasmine Saidula. He says, Buddhist practice means facing that which scares people. Death, climate change, racial and gender oppression, and one's own flaws. In many ways, fear becomes the path. Whatever we habitually avoid actually becomes what we have to do. You can't deny the fact that you're going to have to feel real discomfort before you can do anything else. So again, the Dogen quote that Suzuki Roshi says comes up for me, and if my practice doesn't include everything, then it's not real practice. And I must continue to face the ways that I benefit from oppression, and I think I had a lot of opportunity to do this on the Camino. I had nothing but time and walking, and I think each day I would go through my mala and say 180 things I was grateful for each day, and oftentimes think about all of the people that helped get me to Spain, and think of, obviously I thanked like 70 trees each day too that I would pass, and I would chant the repentance verse and the Metta Sutta and all sorts of different chants each day when I was alone, and I felt like it was sort of an act of just walking meditation, and sort of the ritual of walking was actually an expression of my practice in a lot of ways. It was an act of simplicity and having only what was on my back, and it seemed in some ways like sesshin. I felt very raw and very tender, and there's a lot of pain, maybe not back pain, but other kinds of pain. So again, this intimacy with self and others came up for me. I felt an intimacy with nature, and I met some really lovely people, and I got to sort of listen to them, and they listened to me, and there's, because we were just walking all day, people seemed a lot more open, and they seemed sort of willing and ready to tell their stories. And I really think people took care of each other in a lot of ways. One day early on, I was sitting on the side of the road and I felt really deflated, and I had my first painful blister, and I didn't know how to pop it, and I was scared, and I sort of just sat there listening to other people who had also taken a break in the same spot. They were eating lunch, and all of a sudden this woman who I'd met just yesterday came by, and I think on Appalachian Trail, maybe other trails, you get like good nicknames. We apparently are not very creative, and we just kind of use like the city or the country the people were from. So her name is Ireland, or I also call her the doctor after her help. But she stopped walking and sort of sat next to me and was really sweet to me, and said, you know, she gave me this really scary needle that she had gotten the other day from a pharmacist. She actually went to two different pharmacists. They told her two different things to take care of her blisters, so she had an extra needle. It was great for me. And she said just something very simple, like, treat this blister like it was your child. Like, be very tender to it. Take your time when you pop it. There's no rush. And just that moment was very meaningful to me. And it was just one of many experiences where people really took care of me, and I had many opportunities to take care of other people too. And there are other sweet moments where the last couple of days after I finished, I was just hanging out in Santiago, and I was with Colorado, and she was planning her next few days around going to church, because it's very popular incense, this massive, like, I think it's like 170-pound incense burner, gets like flown in the air by 8 different people, have to hold it and harness it and throw it around. And actually, I thought it was really silly, but it was actually kind of moving, I hate to admit it. And so she was so excited about seeing this. She was kind of changing all of her plans just so she can see it. And you only get to see it once in a while. It's unpredictable when it's going to happen. Masses every day, but this is some special occasion. And I was leaving from the bathroom, and she saw me, and she ran towards me, and she's like, Katie, or Chicago, probably, Chicago. We have to go to Mass right now. And so I ran with her. I was resistant at first, but I'm like, all right, Colorado, wacky thing, you. And we went, and it was near the end, so it was really nice. We didn't have to sit through the whole thing. And it was this really moving experience, actually. And I looked over at her while they were, right as the organ started playing and people started singing. And I looked around, and everyone was crying, and I felt like everyone just seemed like very proud of their accomplishments. And it was so nice just to kind of look over her and see her deep joy and knowing what she sort of had been through to get through this, and her accomplishment and her openness during this journey. And the connection felt very, very meaningful, and with everyone in the room in some ways. And then there's another moment of sort of openness where each time I would really get in a deep conversation in Spanish, which isn't actually deep because my Spanish is horrible, I felt very close with the people that I was speaking with, or usually it was one person. And one day, for a couple of hours, I walked with Barcelona, and she was very, very, very open. And again, I have to pay so much attention when I'm speaking Spanish that there was nothing else going on. So people would walk by, and I was almost like scared. I almost jumped when people would walk by us on the road. And she had so much to say about her life, and she admitted so many difficulties where she was emotionally, and it was really lovely to see how open she was able to get with just a couple of hours of knowing each other. So I think my experience with Green Gulch and the Camino and Zazen in general just brought such an openness despite how, as much as I say that I appreciate openness and intimacy, it actually is really hard sometimes for me to sort of be open. And so it was nice to have these experiences that sort of drew that out of me. So these two adventures, these two searches for transformation really help cultivate other ways of being for me. And I think help me explore these questions of what does it mean to be good or wise or generous or love what does it mean to love myself? And I think another quote that has come up for me in the last couple of years that's really powerful is from Audre Lorde in the Cancer Journals. I had a poster of this up in my apartment for a while, and it's, "When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it becomes less and less important whether I'm afraid." And so this is, again, this idea of accepting that pain and fear is a part of the process, but it can create space for greater joy and more action. So although this quote is meaningful to me, I often ask myself, am I getting closer to this or am I actually getting further away from this? And what would it look like for me to get closer to this? And I think, again, in my quest to be good, I keep coming back to what does that even mean? What does that even look like? And this sort of worthiness. And I, before I left, and still now I'm reading this book, I haven't finished it yet. And actually last night I went to see how to define this person. I wanted to see what her label was on her website, and I got totally distracted about her blog. So I think I'll just describe her as an anthropologist, and her name is Alexis Shotwell, and her book is called Against Purity. And she says, "All there is, while things perpetually fall apart, is the possibility of acting from where we are. Being against purity means that there's no primordial state we might wish to get back to. No Eden we have desecrated, no pre-toxic body we might uncover through enough chia seeds and kombucha. There's no pre-racial state we can access. Erasing histories of slavery, forced labor on railroads, colonialism, genocide, and their concomitant responsibilities and requirements. There's no food we can eat, clothing we can buy, or energy we can use without deepening our ties to the complex web of suffering. So what happens if we start from there?" So even though I just went on this solo walk, I can't separate my personal suffering and healing from those of others. And it's so easy for me to think, oh, let me go shop at this grocery store or help this person, or what would right livelihood look in this moment, and not see my own righteousness within this. And it takes a lot of work for me to even notice when I'm being righteous. I was in Boston for a little while before I came back from the Camino, and I had Dokusan with the teacher there, and it was really interesting. I was asking questions about, you know, what should I do next, and I keep struggling with how to live my life and be happy but also be somewhat helpful to people. And he totally called me out on my righteousness, and I think many people do this, and it's important for me to hear, but it's not easy all the time. But I think these layers of righteousness actually block me from being present and from connecting with others and from doing really important work. And what could it look like to let go of this idea of self and to not always get stuck with that? I'm going to conclude soon. But other questions that I have are just, how do I take the Camino and Green Gulch with me? How do I continue to be open, to find new ways to be raw and to love deeply, and to continue to find my commitment to sacred space and what it means to have that time in my daily life. And I want to close with a quote from Zenju Earthland Manual. It was so hard to choose a quote. I have a couple written down here, but I'm just going to choose one now. And she says, "Our rage, pain, and anger are to be exposed if only for us to transform and mature with it. In Buddhist practice, we say congratulations because now is a time we have been practicing for. No more just practicing the dance. We must now dance. And this is not a dress rehearsal." So thank you all for your time and comments, questions, etc. It's time for that.
Thank you, Katie. Comments, responses, please feel free.
If you want, I can show you some blisters or other things, too. I'm happy to. Hey, Ben.
So how many days did you walk?
I think it was about 33 days. I didn't actually count. I can go back and count, but I took a day off every week, which is actually totally against the grain. Apparently, people do not like taking breaks on the Camino or resting. They like walking through pain and injury. So it was actually quite a difficult experience to constantly actually be saying goodbye to people, because I would walk with a couple people here and there, and then I would take a break and they would keep going. Sometimes I would run into them again, sometimes not.
Kathy?
I told you that I have to go.
It's okay.
I don't want to do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.
Good to see you, Kathy. Responses. I really appreciated your sharing, openness, and your own wishes for purity and goodness, all that stuff, and your honesty about the problems with that.
Apparently, Catherine means pure, so I can't get away from it.
There you go. Anybody else stuck in pure?
Someone had to introduce that to me too, so I'm happy to spread the word.
Katie?
Are you fearful now? I feel like every time I've taken an opportunity to like step out of the normalcy of my life, like the daily grind, like there's kind of a little bit of my car and drugs a little bit, and then coming back was much more fear invoking for me. Because it felt like that way, or like be existing in a present way in my daily life, and whenever I do, I return to this kind of like nagging feeling that I'm not living my most like human experience. So I'm feeling very good.
Well, I had a really nice, that's a good question and something that I'm sure I could talk about for a while, and I'll try to make it really long. I'll make this really lengthy, actually, because it's unlike me to be lengthy. I had a nice, actually, sort of cushion where I went to Portugal and then Switzerland and then Boston before I came back, so that sort of gave me actually time to process a little bit and prepare myself, because I think I'm getting to know myself a little bit more, and that when I come back, it's actually really, really quite difficult for me for a number of reasons. And I think, it's a sort of different rhythm coming back and adjusting to a whole different way of sort of spending my time. And for both of those experiences, I did what, you know, I was only sort of accountable to myself, especially on the Camino. I mean, I didn't have to talk to anyone if I didn't want to all day. So the idea of, like, how do I now interact with other people in a kind way and not be super moody all the time? And that's super hard for me because I don't have that much practice with it. But I think only practice makes it a little bit easier and it makes more sense. It's just being present in a different situation, you just sort of learn to be patient with yourself. And did that answer your question at all? We can keep talking about it.
I think after some special experience, like after Sesshin, there's some tendency to want to hold on to it. And I think it's good to just let go of it and just see what happens next. But also, it does stay with you.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can get rid of it, but it doesn't stay with you in the way you think it will.
Well, yeah, and I wanted to stay with some of the idealistic pieces of it. When I went to Switzerland, I watched The Way, the movie, one of the movies about the Camino, and I was just like, this is so cute, and it's not even a good movie at all, but it's
the one with Martin Sheen.
Yeah, but there's little pieces of it that are like, I remember when I just did that, and that was so nice. That was a lovely time, and it's nice to reminisce. Yeah, definitely. Well, hey, Matt.
Oh, go ahead.
Thanks for your talk. It was really interesting how you didn't talk about all the great things that it was like the stuff that really, like the blisters, you know, that's great. What made you decide to go the Camino? Like, because you were, I thought maybe that you had some, like, Christian background or something, and that's why you were, well, why did you choose that pilgrimage or Camino?
Well, I wasn't sure for a while what to do, and I had been interested for many years on doing some sort of walk, and I was thinking maybe the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail, but I'm not a very good camper. I don't start fires very well. And also, it's a lot more planning you have to do for those trips. You have to send your food in advance. And the Camino is luxurious. I mean, it's really hard, but it's also luxurious. You get amazing food every day. And it's really inexpensive, and people cook it for you. Usually you could cook your food if you want, but I didn't do that much of that. It was just somewhat something that kind of planned itself. You don't really have to do a lot of planning. And after Green Gulch, for me personally, I don't know about anyone else, you don't plan. You sort of, like, you get all of your planning tendencies just, like, pulled out of you. So the last thing I wanted to do was plan it, like, this trip that took a lot of thinking. I just wanted to go walk. So the Camino is a perfect way to do that. It sort of takes care of itself.
So, thank you very much. Any other last comments or responses or questions before we close? David.
I'm not sure I got the sense right. It sounds like at Green Gulch, you were looking at Green Gulch, and then you would go off into nature and be by yourself. And then here, when you went to Spain, you were just constantly involved with people. And I'm wondering if you could comment on that juxtaposition. That one, here you're just in a cathedral of trees by yourself, and here you're in a cathedral of people, and you're not by yourself.
I'm not sure that's exactly what it was like, actually. I think in Green Gulch, there was a nice mix of nature hiking, but I sometimes hiked other people. And I shared a room with someone, and I interacted with people in the kitchen all the time. So there's a good mix of communal and community life and solitude. And then on the Camino, I went during a time when it wasn't very popular to go, so there wasn't that many people, actually. And you have many opportunities to be by yourself, actually. So I think that was a time when I was more by myself, is I would leave quite early and just kind of go off on my own. And there were some days in the middle of the trip, probably, where I saw not a single other person on the whole walk, the whole day. Of course, if you go probably now, it would be a totally different story. It's quite crowded, I would imagine. And you can, if you want, choose to walk with people and be with people the entire trip in Spain. I just didn't choose to do that. And you stay in hotels with people that are walking, so you have plenty of opportunity after the walk to talk to people too and to get to know people. And then you see them later, a couple of days later on the trail too. So there's interaction on the trail. I'm not saying you never talk to anyone on the trail, but you also don't have to. You can just say hi and buen camino and go on your way, and that's it. So I think they're actually quite similar in a lot of ways, that they have that mix of community and solitude. And for me, it was a constant difficulty of, like, how do I follow my own rhythms of this? How do I decide to be with other people or to be by myself? And sometimes I wanted both, or sometimes I didn't know what I wanted. And it's a constant difficulty. And I think there's this idea that, oh, I'll go to Spain and I won't have anything difficult to deal with. And, of course, that's not the case.